Welcome to the Meditation Podcast. You can find all our episodes on meditationpodcast.org. We're also on BitChute and YouTube. You'll find the links in the podcast description. I also have got four other podcasts, the Learn Polish, the Crypto, the Awakening, Exposing Fraud, and with Solutions, and also the Speaking Podcast, and my podcast coaching. You'll find everything on bio.link/podcaster. Today, my guest, he's actually got a bachelor's. He's got a master's, a doctorate in religious studies, but he's also an author of three books. Please welcome Amos Smith.
Hi, good to be here with you, Roy. It's good to be on your podcast.
So, I mean, I mentioned a few little things, but you might just kind of introduce yourself to the listeners.
Yes. Well, the story that informs my life more than any other is that I used to be a mountain climber. And when I was on mountain vistas, I would have a distinct sense that I was part of something much larger than myself. And I would look out over the mountain vista and feel that I was part of something very old, a very old story, and that I belong to that story, and that I am at home in this world, and that I am actually connected, you know, to all of life. And this is how, you know, this is how it started. And then later on, I pursued meditation in the Christian tradition, and I found the Benedictine teacher, Thomas Keating. He's a monk in the Benedictine tradition, and I learned centering prayer from him. And as I practiced centering prayer for over the years, some pretty amazing things happened to me. One of them being that the tension that I used to have in my body was evacuated, and my nervous system, which used to be very tense, it began to heal. And I felt much more of a sense of presence and peace and contentment in my life. So that's really been the energy behind my books and the motivation behind my books. And it's the saving grace in my life, you know, the mountaineering experiences followed by the centering prayer discipline that I had for many, many years.
Excellent. And I know you, because I just on my research, I see you were doing wrestling as well. I'm just curious, was that just wrestling in college, or what was your level of wrestling that you were doing?
Well, I was maybe you could say a fanatic when I was in high school. I would wrestle in the summertime freestyle, and so I'd wrestle against, you know, in international tournaments, and then I would wrestle during the year in with my high school team, and I was the captain of my wrestling team. And it was a big deal for me. You know, I used to skip lunch and swim laps in my pool, and I used to, you know, get up early in the morning and run and that kind of thing. So I think that athleticism and that athletic zeal is what I applied to centering prayer and meditation. And maybe that's my unique angle on meditation, is that I think it is a discipline, you know, like any other, like wrestling or learning to play the violin, and it does require discipline. And it should be, if we're doing it, it should be done every day.
And I think it, like, as you say, you know, the wrestling and also the climbing, because you have to be totally focused in your head. You can't have all this clutter going on because you're not paying attention, and especially climbing, that could be dangerous if you make a mistake. So with the centering prayer, for those that don't know, you might explain it in detail.
So my favorite metaphor for what happens during centering prayer is it's like watching boats that are going down a river, and each boat is a thought. And in the beginning, when you start centering prayer, there are many, many, many boats, and actually the river is just jam packed with boats. But as you practice longer, what starts to happen is there's a space that starts to happen between the boats. And so there's more and more space. And you also, you don't get quite as caught up in boats, because there are some boats that they just demand your attention, and they're very You know, it's like seeing the most amazing and the most colorful flotilla in a parade. You know, you just, your attention just gets drawn into it and you get sucked into it. And before you know it, you're just, you know, you're just obsessed with it. But over time, what happens is you have less and less interest in the boats. And you start to see that all the boats have the same nature, and that is that they come and then they go. And so it's the passing nature of all things and all thoughts. And then what starts to happen when you go, you know, for, let's say, 2 years meditating each day, and then maybe doing an extended retreat once a year, like I have done, you know, a 7 to 10 day retreat every year. What starts to happen is you start to notice the water that carries all of the boats. So you start to get in touch with a deeper reality, because the boats are just coming and going, but there's something deeper than the boats that is carrying them all. And it's the water beneath the boats. And there's something about the water which is ancient and which is mysterious, and which is also, you know, the root, you might say, of the mind. And when you go deeper into it, you start to get in touch with what the writers of the Philokalia, which is the most celebrated mystical text in the Eastern Church, it's what they refer to it as is our original nature or our original purity. You can also say original mind, and it's this root of the mind which is much more stable than the you know, the hyperactive mind that is based in the senses, because the senses are always coming and going. You know, my son, you know, eats a bowl of pudding, and he's, you know, he's very excited about the pudding, but then the pudding is gone, and then he is sad because the pudding is gone. And that is the nature of all phenomenon that is based on the senses. The boat comes, the boat goes. The pudding comes, and we're excited about it, and then the pudding goes. But there is a deeper basis of the mind which is not rooted in the senses, and it's much deeper than the senses, and it's what all the mystics talk about. And once you taste it, there's nothing in this world that can compare to it.
And like, for somebody getting involved in this, because I think this kind of works irrespective of your religious beliefs, because, you know, does everybody has tried different things, but the reality is just being kind of totally present. And do you kind of encourage people? I know there's silent retreats and things like this, but when you're kind of getting into the center of prayer, is it something that you kind of close your eyes, or is it something that you're just kind of sitting there and just being present with your thoughts?
Well, so in the centering prayer tradition, there's three different types of once you advance in the centering prayer tradition, there are three different types of meditators. One they refer to as breathers. So those are people who focus on their breath. And then there's another group that they call worders. And that's people who, whenever their mind wanders, they return to a sacred word. And that's how everybody starts out with in centering prayer, is you have a sacred word that brings you back to your center. The third type is what they call gazers. And that's people who just have an open gaze, you know, out in front of them on the floor. And, you know, people will tend to gravitate towards one type or another. I happen to be a gazer. I find that in meditation, if I leave my eyes open, that I can extend the awareness, and I get drowsy less easily. So I like to just have an open gaze, on the floor, which is about, you might say, 4 feet in front of me is where I gaze. But it's, I think one, so basically the centering prayer tradition, you have a sacred word. My sacred word happens to be rest. So it just reminds me to quit getting caught up in my thoughts and everything else, and just to rest. But But the way you use the sacred word, sometimes people can use a little bit of coaching on that. So if you have a thought right before lunch, because you're meditating right before lunch, you have a thought that, oh, you know, after meditation, I'm going to be able to have lunch. Won't that be cool? Right. That's fine. That's no problem. So just let the thought come, let it go. It's not an issue. You don't even need the sacred word. You just let it come and go. But then let's say you have this thought. Of, you know, after I meditate, I'm going to have lunch. And then you start thinking about the details of it. You think, well, I really want an avocado sandwich. I don't know if the avocado in the refrigerator is ripe yet. And do I still have that sourdough? That sourdough is what I really want. I don't know if it's there. And you start kind of going off on this thought tangent. That is the purpose of the technology of the sacred word. Because when you get caught up in these thoughts, it's at that time you say, okay, my mind has kind of gone off on a tangent, and now I'm going to rest. So I'm going to come back to my center, right? And you do that over and over again until over time, you have a deeper and deeper silence.
And with the guy that was kind of teaching you, that brought you in, I know that I think he recommended something like 40 minutes a day. When somebody's new to this, is that the way that they should do it, that you recommend that they kind of do 40 minutes? And is it in one go, or the 40 minutes is broken up into, like, you know, 220 minutes, or even perhaps even 315 minutes?
Well, so Roy, this is really the clincher here, because this is the reason why there's relatively few, you know, people who practice centering prayer or disciplined silences or meditation or waiting worship or however you want to call it. There's very few people who do this. And the reason is because they just never really get the start. So what I recommend, and I have a friend of mine who's also a teacher of centering prayer, Rich Lewis, and he recommends the same thing. He basically just says, you know, to people who are starting out, just put some time on the calendar, go and sit in silence as long as you can stand it. So if it's just 5 minutes, 5 minutes. If it's 10 minutes, 10 minutes, great. But just sit as long as you can. Don't worry about, you know, a rigid kind of time structure. Just do it. And do that every day for one calendar month. And even so, if it's 5 minutes one day, then 7 minutes the next day, then 3 minutes the third day, then maybe 10 minutes the fourth day. The main point is that you do it every day. And then after you've done that for 1 month, then you have some you have some consistency, some habit. And then there is the hope that, you know, you can increase that amount of time that you do centering prayer. But yeah, I think that's the best way to do it. Just for one calendar, say, hey, this is a new year, a month of January, month of February, whatever. That month, I'm going to sit every day. I don't care if it's 3 minutes or 15 minutes. I'm going to sit. And then by the end of the calendar, you know, if you have 30 days, great. Now, if you miss a day, what I would recommend is that you start your 30 days over again. So that you have 30 days consecutive where you have done some kind of silent meditation. Doesn't matter for how long.
Yeah, excellent. And I've had actually Rich Lewis on the show. I don't know, was it last year or the year before that? But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. So you mentioned about you do like a retreat a year, and I've seen on your YouTube different places that you, so you've been to a lot of different places. So one, because people I know here in Poland have told me they've gone on silent retreats, and everybody said it was incredible. I've never done it, but I'm curious and I'm thinking about it. But you might kind of explain the day in, day out of the retreat, and also, because you've been to so many, how do you know what's the good and the bad? How do you kind of decipher where is a very good place as opposed to maybe going to a terrible one?
Well, so you know, the Orthodox, they sometimes when somebody says, you know, what is meditation like, or what is a retreat like, what they'll do is they'll take a glass of water. And the water has dirt in it, and they'll stir it up so that all the dirt, all the particles are kind of, you know, swishing around in the glass. And you can't see through the glass because there's too much dirt. And then what they'll do is they'll take that glass and they'll put it on a shelf, and you let it sit there. And you'll find that after about 5 minutes, you can see through it a little better, but it's still a little bit cloudy. And then you wait another 10 minutes and it's starting to get quite clear. And then after 15 minutes, it's very clear. And all those particles of dirt, all of the distractions that you have in your life, all those, you know, fluttery thoughts, monkey mind, it all just settles to the bottom of the glass. And then you can see through the glass and it's clear. And that's the nature of your mind. The nature of your mind is clear and spacious and open. The original nature that the Philokalia talks about. So that's what happens on retreat. If you sit for long enough, the all the particles, all the distractions just start to settle. I love that phrase in the Quaker tradition. They the Quaker elders talk about settling down. So you just sit, and then over time you settle down. And as far as where to go, you know, I think my favorite place is where I've had some of the most powerful retreats would be Benedict's Monastery in Snowmass, Colorado, and that's the monastery of Thomas Keating. You know, I would say the most significant teacher for me in this tradition of centering prayer, and you know, Benedict's Monastery is just inspiring. You know, all the mountains all around, you got the Colorado Rockies, and it's just a wide open space that's there, and it's beautiful. So but you know, it, just about any place that works for you is fine.
And when you go there, I presume they kind of tell you the structure, the form up, but then every time you're having food together, is it that you eat alone, or do you all eat in the same place, but is it silent as well? I'm assuming it's silent as well. Yeah.
Yeah. You eat in silence. The usual structure of a centering prayer retreat, like let's say it's a 10-day retreat. The first couple of days they let you talk at mealtime. And then the middle 6 days, it's just all silent. And then the final 2 days, they start letting you talk again. So it's, and you know, the nature of the conversation, you know, the first 2 days, the last 2 days is very different. Because you've gone to a place that's much more substantial and more, you might say, sincere.
And do you practice kind of mindful eating as well, or does that not come into the equation?
Well, you know, over time, especially if you practice for years and years, you start to realize that the conversation with my wife is a meditation, right? It's a practice of awareness and mindfulness. The eating of my food, the sweeping of my floor. You know, the meditation, it doesn't start and stop with a meditation chair. That's kind of an arbitrary boundary. It starts to be, you know, a part of life.
Excellent. And like, you kind of teach nonviolence. Is that kind of in general, or is it something that you kind of to help others?
Well, so the nature of the mind, if it's not trained, is to attach on to latch onto things, and so it attaches to some food that is delicious, or it attaches to some beautiful painting, or you know, or it attaches to some, you know, beautiful Beethoven or whatever it is. In the mind, then it feels attachment towards those things, and that's really the root of violence. Example of this is it's very common throughout the world that there's always a number of murders every year based on this, that there are two men who love the same woman, and so one of the men kills the other man. And so the attachment to this woman is so strong that that you're willing to kill to maintain hold of that relationship with that woman, and you're threatened by this other man who might take over or whatever. So you kill that man, and this happens every year all throughout the world. It's a very common scenario, but that's really the root of violence, is that we're so attached to something that we're willing to kill for it. And it could even be the possessions in our house. You know, the possessions in our house are so important that, you know, if somebody tries to steal them, we'll kill that person. So you know, that's really, you know, when you get deeply into meditation, you lessen your attachment to things. You start to let go more and more. You don't have that acquisitive, you know, human need to grab onto things as much. You just kind of let your ability to let go is much better after years of meditation.
Oh, excellent. And a load of the diseases are stress related. And like, I just know that when you're kind of in a meditative state, you don't let the stress get you. It is like, as you've discussed, you know, all through, you know, even with the boat, you're just kind of allowing things to happen and conscious of it. And I'm assuming, just because you've been involved in this so long, that it's the circle that are practicing this, that they're probably healthier as well, because they don't have the stress like a lot of people kind of bring into their cells.
Yeah, I ran into a Canadian woman who was researching the most long-lived communities in the world. And what she found in her research is that the most long-lived communities in the world are spiritually based communities. And it makes a lot of sense, because if you work on yourself and if you have less attachment, less ego, you more readily, as a reflex, just let go on a regular basis, then you're going to have better relationships with other people, and there's going to be less of that potential for having a, you know, a pissing match with somebody or some kind of, you know, because that's what so often happens in communities, is that two people will just butt heads and create a huge problem. But if you can go into yourself and learn how to let go and meditate, yeah, I can really help with community life as well.
And like in everyday life, whether it's in road rage or even in the supermarket or anything, when somebody reacts angrily, the fact that you're in control of yourself, you're not reacting back, which in turn kind of stops the whole situation, because they take a pause because they expect somebody to kind of raise up as well and bite back. But when you don't, it catches them by surprise, because very few can actually do that.
Well, the beauty of centering prayer is it creates space where there is no space. So usually if somebody experiences anger, it just takes hold of them, right? And then they start to act out of that anger. But if somebody who's been doing centering prayer for a long time, they have enough space, they have enough wherewithal where they can kind of hit the pause button, and then they can name it, and they can say, oh, this is anger. Right. And that's what we do on the meditation cushion or in the meditation chair, is you just observe what's going through your mind. So if it's sadness, you say, you don't say my sadness, you just name it for what it is, sadness. And then if there's anger, you don't say my anger, you just say, oh, this is anger. And then if you've experienced shame, you say, oh, shame. It's not my shame, just the shame, right? And it comes and it goes, and it's just, and you get some space from your emotions, so you get control of your mind, and that's really the beauty of this. Is I forget who it was who said, if we had as much control over our legs as we have over our minds, we would not be able to walk. Because the mind is a monkey mind for most people. It is scattered, it is fragmented, it is distracted. It cannot concentrate on one thing for long. It's just all over the place. So it's a kind of a training of the mind, and then also you know, getting some ability to handle difficult emotions as they come.
So your three books, we'll start, you might kind of give us a kind of brief synopsis of, like, the first one is Healing the Divine. So what do you cover in that book?
So when I was you know, doing a lot of centering prayer, Thomas Keating always said that when you do a lot of centering prayer, the energy has to go somewhere, because there's a lot of energy that you tap into, and that needs to go somewhere. So for me, it went into writing books, but the first book is really that contemplative mind, or that contemplative approach applied to Jesus. So it's seeing Jesus through what you might say mystical eyes or contemplative eyes. And then the second book is seeing scripture through mystical eyes or contemplative eyes. And then the third book, which will come out sometime this month, is seeing a faith tradition through mystical eyes, or contemplative eyes. And that faith tradition is a Quaker tradition. And that's, I happen to be a Quaker.
Okay. And with your studies then, because you did the religious studies, you've done a bachelor, master's, and a doctorate. You might kind of talk about what exactly did they cover. Was it in one particular field, or did it cover all the religions?
So my first bachelor's degree was comparative religion. So I did look at all of the religions of the world. And then my master's was a master of divinity, and it was, training to be a minister in the, a mainline Protestant minister. And I was a minister for a number of years. And then the doctorate was a doctor of ministry. So it was and it was a doctor of ministry and preaching, so it really focused on the art of preaching. So
okay. And with what you're doing, have you noticed over the years more are getting involved? Because from people that are kind of conscious of meditation, whatever form, I've noticed that you can have the conversation with the 18-year-old now, whereas before you couldn't do that. And this just seems to be from what I'm seeing more and more. And in the centering prayer, are you seeing it growing over the years?
You mean more and more people who are interested?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it seems like with COVID, that's one of the silver linings of COVID, is that people have become hermits without necessarily, the intent to become a hermit. And people have become, just shut into their homes. And they have an opportunity now to, with much less difficulty to start a contemplative practice like centering prayer. So I do think that that COVID in particular has lent itself to this kind of practice, and it really helps people to work through all the struggles and challenges of our times. But as far as people, talking about centering prayer is I think people have said it's like trying to sell air or something. It's not. And the percentage of people who are really interested is always going to be a minority. I think maybe 5% of the country are truly, contemplative or have that approach, and then maybe 20%, have an ear for it. They can actually, spend time exploring something like centering prayer. But most people, they're just so involved with their work life and so involved with whatever they're doing, and it just doesn't seem practical at all to them. And they're just like, I don't know what this is. I like this one passage from the Tao Te Ching, he says, when you talk about the Tao, there's always going to be at least one person who just throws their head back and laughs out loud. And he said, if that person didn't laugh, then the Tao would not be the Tao. So, yeah.
And with the air, we would, years ago, they wouldn't have thought people would be actually buying bottles of water. So maybe, there's a market for bottles of air as well to be sold. You wouldn't put it past them. But what I've noticed is that once people kind of get into this state, irrespective of their beliefs, they don't tend to jump back into you know, the stress and everything, they tend to, once they get control of themselves, this they tend to be there. So hopefully the ripple effect and more will start getting involved. But listen, Emma, I thoroughly enjoyed the way that you've explained everything today. So you might let people know, how will they get in contact with you?
So if you just put into Google, if you put Amos Smith author, you'll see all of my various stuff, you know, come up in Google. But you can also email me directly if you like. And my email address is amossmi@gmail.com. So it's my first name and then the first three letters of my last name @gmail.com.
Okay, perfect. And I'll put the links, because I've got some of your social media links as well. I'll put them in the thing. But with the email, I'll put a bracket at the @, just so you won't be spammed, because there's bots that will actually bombard you with that. But thank perfect. You very much.
Okay, thank you, Roy.
That's all for the meditation podcast. As mentioned, we're on BitChute and YouTube, and you'll find everything about me and my other four podcasts and my coaching on bio.link/podcaster. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating. And if you buy Amos's books, make sure you give him a rating as well. It all helps for more people to see his book. Until next week, take care.